right, everybody. How you doing? It's great morning. Today, Veterans Day weekend. When I want to get, you know, because that's when all the sales are. I'm here with my beautiful partner. Carrie and I became partners this week.
Yes, officially.
Officially partners, which is huge, because I don't trust that many people.
Yeah, I'm honored. Thank you. Thank you for trusting me. I think there was a point where no one trusted me, so.
Right. Right. And then there was a time when nobody wants to be my partner because nobody trusted me to be their partner, you know. But, yeah, no, it's been a great week. And Lucy, it is Veterans Day, so you really should, you know, everything should be free, Lucy.
Yeah, it's an inside joke. Unfortunately, I'm part of the inside, so I know what that was referring to.
Right. So I just want to tell you, you know, they have free meals. Yeah, you're there to get free meals.
Be kind to your veteran.
Right.
Which, Joel, you are a veteran.
I am. I was in the Marine Corps 14 years. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
That was my formative young adult life years, yeah.
And I have heard some of the stories, and Joel would never be able to talk about these stories because this broadcast is regulated by the FCC. So
right.
I don't even think some of the things he normally talks about we could say.
No.
But man, Joel's got some stories.
Yeah, when I look back at it, it's just nutty. When you're 17, this is the thing. If you grew up in the country, I grew up in the Catskill Mountains, right? And I would, my version of the city, I'd go to Manhattan like in the summers to spend. Well, my brother would, he would leave me there alone. So I'd be like 14, you know, hanging out with the prostitutes on 42nd Street because I don't have money to take the change down.
Right.
To get into the city. But that was about it. That was, you know, and that was country kid, the prostitutes, the country kid, right. So now you're 17, right? They put you, they go in the Marine Corps, you make it.
Because yeah.
I was in shape. I was always running. But yeah, and then they send you overseas with these women. And these people that they, it's not even realistic the things they could do with a rubber band and a net. I mean, so it messes you up forever because now, you know.
I've just heard some of the stories and it's messed me up. So.
Right, because I was this geeky kid. I looked like Carrot Top. I had to, when I was going to school, I mean, for me to get a girlfriend, she'd have to be blind or she would just, or anywhere, she'd be seriously on drugs. And so when you get over there, you know, my first girlfriends were prostitutes.
Yeah.
For first, yeah, they love me, GI. That's what they would say. And I would believe it. And I had these birth control glasses on. And I thought it was the hottest thing going. 9 feet tall, wearing platform shoes and some stupid Hong Kong plastic polyester suit that had holes in it from all my cigarette burns. But no, I'm serious.
As you're talking about prostitutes, I got to tell you, I went out to coffee with a friend of mine last night.
Speaking of prostitutes.
No, yeah, not my friend.
Sorry.
He is in a local halfway house here in Rochester.
Right.
And he was telling me, like, the big thing right now is the guys in the halfway house getting prostitutes. They'll go out, they'll leave.
Well, yeah.
Hook up with these prostitutes and then
they
come
bring
back
them back
to the house.
They don't bring them back?
No.
That would be better.
I can't imagine. This is my dinner guest.
I believe that, yes.
Cinnamon
would change your name on the way, you know. She's my sponsor. No, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, so.
Well, that's an addiction right there for a lot of people.
It is. Well, you, yeah, for
right?
me. But yeah, because, but what it does, it ruins you.
Right.
You know, I didn't even start smoking until I went to the Marine Corps. But, you know, but when you get over, yeah, because then you come out, you can't find a round eye to do that.
Right.
the kind of stuff that they will do.
Yeah.
So I immediately went back overseas. I came back. I did like a whole, like 13 months overseas. Went all around the world, like in that area, that Western Pacific Rim.
Right.
They call it the Pacific Rim for a reason.
I was going to say it. I'm sure that went over some people's heads
that
are listening. But
yeah, so yeah. But yeah, then I came back and I was in North Carolina. And I think I was just, I don't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was dating some big chick
yeah.
there. But I came back and I went, and then I went right back over.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find love
right
the way I knew it.
Well, it's hard to adjust from what I've heard. I mean, I'm not a veteran. I have not spent any time
right.
in the service, but I know enough people that are veterans to hear that it's really hard to reacclimate and to adjust to civilian life after you've been, especially overseas for a while.
Oh my, yeah, because it's a lot different. Everything is so different. You know,
right.
You go take a girl out on a date, and what do you mean you don't want to bring two chickens and a goat in with you?
Right.
I mean, I don't know. And she looks at you like you're some creepy thing that used to be her Uncle Johnny or something. But no, so it's true. But anyway, the story came up this morning. He's like my new hero, this kid, but I think I misread it because Carrie now told me what it was. It was this kid in Geneseo, which now it's interesting because that tells me now Geneseo is a huge college town, right? And he was caught stealing. It said $3,000 worth of kegs. Now I'm thinking this kid went out and got $3,000 worth of beer, but he was just selling. It's such a college town, so all the kegs were just in the neighborhood. Right, because
that's Geneseo. Now you say Geneseo, maybe it was for the beer, but I was originally thinking, because a lot of people, don't get any ideas.
Right.
A lot of people have been stealing kegs lately and scrapping them, because apparently they're pretty valuable, and then people go out and, you know.
Well, I'm sure that's what it was, because I'm thinking, well, it's a lot of beer. 3,000 bucks worth of kegs? But I can't even get it. He's just, anyway, pull him up. He was on the news, and it was interesting because I'm thinking, wow, I think it's even funnier is the fact that he was smart enough to go into a college town, because it wasn't like he went to the back room of bars,
right,
to get this. He went into neighbors' yards and stole their
kegs.
He's
pretty genius. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, and they arrested him for, you know, but those kegs really aren't yours, right? I mean, you bring them back.
Right. Yeah.
There's like a deposit or something.
Yeah, I believe so.
So I don't know how they fit. Well, the value of it.
Yeah, I'm looking them up right now.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say, maybe I shouldn't make any assumptions.
That was probably for the metal.
It's safe to say that it may have been for the money, for the metal,
Yeah, because he looked like he could be drinking it all, but he's such a skinny little kid. I didn't even.
Yeah.
But no, I saw him. I said, look at this guy. He wasn't an entrepreneur that he went ahead and he figured this whole thing out. But he's from there.
People are pretty crafty. I mean, you think of, and again, I don't want to make an assumption that he's an addict, but a lot of addicts are pretty crafty. You find
or
a way
he's
to
not.
Make some
and we're
money.
Just, yeah, he stole the wrong
or just
thing.
Being judgmental.
I think we're being judgmental. And it just looked like a really, and okay, so let's talk about, we'll talk about the election a little bit because I'm sure everybody is tired of listening to it and all the people that are protesting. And, you know, and it's good because that's being part of America. You're right. You need to be able, you can voice your opinion. That's the part, like, when I even look back at being in the military, that was, everybody says, why do you never hate protesters? Because you're there in the military because it gives people the freedom. Like, we have a wonderful country.
Right.
That you can protest and not agree and.
Right, and not get decapitated or.
Right.
Hanged.
But it's interesting because if you go ask any of these kids that are protesting, only about a handful of them have like a reason why they're protesting.
Oh, the millennial? Yeah.
They don't know. Oh. They don't know because everybody got a trophy. Man, and I just love these. I love these little posts on Facebook where, like, they stopped the protesting. They brought out trophies for everybody.
Thank you for participating in this protest.
Right, because now they felt like they won.
The whole thing's crazy, and I'm not going to get into who, you know, who I was for and who I was against, because I've been talking about this lately. It's not even the figurehead that's the issue right now.
It's not him. Yeah, it's not him.
There's some crazy people out there. They're just some terrible human beings.
Right.
They've been terrible human beings. They will continue to be terrible human beings, regardless of who the president is. And they are the ones that are causing these problems.
You're right. And the whole thing is, I never thought he was going to win. I actually bet my children $100 each.
Oh,
yeah.
Pay up.
I'm paying up today. And it was like, that's the first thing. That's the first people that called me. 6 o'clock on that morning was my daughter screaming in the back because they had just won $100 each from daddy. Because he was like, he really believed that Hillary Clinton was going to win like the rest of the country. But, you know, what happened is interesting, and we have to pay attention to this. It was the silent majority that came out, you know. And that's scary a little bit because that's what people are actually thinking. And those are people that finally went into that voting booth and made that choice. Mm-hmm. She might have won a popular vote. And everybody, if you want to study why we have electoral college, we actually need one. I know some people go back and forth, but some states could never. It's hard to understand it, but I mean, if you're a politician, if you want to win the popular vote, you would necessarily only then campaign in states with a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? You don't. It sort of leaves out the small states, and that's why you had electoral college. It's one of the very vague, I mean, layman's terms of it. People that live in like Utah or.
Mm-hmm. Which our guest today is from Utah.
You're kidding.
Yeah, Dan Workman. We'll be getting him on soon.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that piece of paper with the person's name on it.
Yeah, Dan Workman.
Workman. Yeah, what's in...
He's from Utah. You know...
What if that name was in a movie? What
Workman?
Workman.
No idea.
Not Workman. I mean, it was a character.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
Workman. Yeah. Wasn't there a Fargo? No.
I have no at this point, I have zero idea, folks, about what Joel saw. I'm just looking at him like, I don't know, Workman. Joel, I don't know. One thing I did want to mention, because there is an event that's going on right now in Rochester in support of the local individuals that had their pride flags burned.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you guys haven't heard about that, here in Rochester, New York, two separate people had their rainbow flags. They came home and their rainbow flags had been burned.
That's ridiculous, too.
Just the whole thing. I mean, again, really?
Don't you think it's the same person who did it?
I don't know. There's some people. I mean, it was election day, so some people are saying it was, you know, Trump supporters. I don't care who it was.
No,
it was just a disgusting act. It's just terrible.
It was not. It was some homophobe that named Johnny, whatever. He was driving by in his pickup truck. He was drunk. Yeah.
But the cool thing about all of this is here in Rochester, New York, we are fairly progressive, but we also have a huge LGBTQ community and supporters.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Rochester's like the where the East Coast version of San Francisco.
So everyone's come together and like rallied for these people. And there's an event right now happening. I would be there if it wasn't for the show.
Right.
But I figured since I couldn't be there, I would at least, you know,
Yeah, I mean, it's just so stupid. Weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
Especially Rochester.
Right.
I'm sure the person that did it wasn't from Rochester.
Right.
Driving through. I'm sure. It's probably one dude. I'm sorry. I just think to say it was a coincidence, especially in Rochester, that's not a...
Oh, it wasn't a coincidence.
No, I don't think it was.
Yeah.
I think it's one guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But we'll keep focusing on the positives.
Yeah.
And we are our guest today, Dan... he's a writer. He runs a site called Keep Hoping People.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of his blogs have gone viral. So
that's huge.
Well, it's interesting. A while back, a woman named Robin Bright, she wrote a book, an at-home opiate withdrawal detox book, and she asked if I would review it. So she sent me a copy. I reviewed it. And one of the authors was Dan. And I messaged him after I read his chapter because it was awesome. It was just he's talking about, you know, crap in his pants going through withdrawal.
Right.
He was just telling it like it is.
Right.
You know,
that's
what
happens.
There was no sugarcoating it. It's like, this is what it is. It's brutal. It sucks. It's hellish. But you'll get through it. And so I messaged him and we've ended up having this exchange through social media.
Yeah. And that's all because that was what the book was about, was detoxing yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which in certain ways you can with opiates. Don't try that with alcohol.
Oh, no, because you could die.
Die,
yeah,
right.
Seizures and whatnot. Same with benzos.
Yeah. You got to be really careful. But opiates, yes, you can. They do that in jail. They throw you in jail and they just make you sick.
Yeah.
You know,
and make fun of you. And
make fun of you.
Make you
and
feel like a piece of crap, yeah. Tell you you're a piece of crap.
Right. I mean, it's good to go to a detox if you want, you know, but you don't have to. And I give plenty of people an inpatient detox themselves.
Yeah.
And
we're going to get her on the show at some point, too. She wants to be on. So she can talk a little bit more about the book and why she wrote that book.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking forward to having Dan on today. He seems like he's kind of right on par with you and I.
And he's way out. He's like way out there, right? He's like in
Utah. I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
What's in Utah? Oh, the Mormons. And people.
The Mormons. He was actually a Mormon missionary at one point.
Really?
I believe it was missionary. He was Mormon. He'll talk to you about that. It was a very interesting his story.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
What else? Okay, we got our show. We got a big thing coming up. We need to start promoting.
We are less than a month away.
We
have a meeting after the show today
to look at a new venue. And this is not. Yeah, this is interesting, but it's a great venue, right?
Yeah, it's a substance-free venue. It's called the Venue at the Pillar.
Yeah,
and it's promoted as a substance-free venue. The guy that operates it, he's a straight edge guy.
Yeah,
I know.
And straight edge people are okay. I have friends that are straight edge. I mean, there's obviously extremists, but
yeah,
you know, but no. So we're gonna go check this out, and it's not, you know, we are for everybody. So we're trying to make it for an everybody event.
We want what's best for everybody, and you know, we won't go into specifics, but some things have come up, so we may pick a different venue, but as soon as we have things solidified, you're going to be hearing a lot more about the show. You're going to be hearing a lot of the artists that are going to be playing at the show.
We are sponsored.
You're going to get sick of us because
we're not sponsored. We're underwritten by
The
Livingston Council on Alcohol and Substance Abuse.
Yep. Casa Trinity.
And they're going to be coming on December 3rd.
Correct.
Their prevention program is actually doing this. So that's really big because that's a very progressive treatment center, and they're coming out to support us. Mm-hmm. We're really happy about that.
Yeah.
Recovery Fitness, our friends over there, yeah. they're helping out with this event. I saw and was on TV, right? Talking about veterans this past weekend.
Yeah, and that Battle Buddy program that he started.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then, you know, we'll have some people along the way. We're not going to bring their name up yet, but, you know, that might be helping us along this way. But.
Yeah, stay tuned because there's going to be some cool collaborations coming up.
Yeah, and this is the beginning of everything because, I mean, we want this to get bigger. This is we're testing this, and hopefully someday we'll get to a festival.
Yeah.
Like Woodstock, like a big festival, like a 500,000 people. Whatever. They won't be eating the brown acid.
We have high expectations.
We do have high expectations. We should.
Mm-hmm.
We should. We're on the verge. We're on the verge of a lot of things big. So what else is... I'm trying to...
No, I mean, those are... That's really... I think that's about it. What's been going on. I mean...
Yeah, I just don't... I don't know. I tell that... it's in our, you know, it's so funny. I had a conversation recently about... well, this election, but they're also talked about the opiate epidemic. And there's a view, and I think we talked about that. Oh, I didn't know you had that. You had like a little, you just give them your fingerprint in it.
Oh, yeah, the iPhones.
Yeah. I was watching Carrie do this high tech. Oh, you know why I'm looking at that. You know, it's sad, sad, sad.
Huh.
Robert Vaughn died. He was the man from Uncle.
Yeah. Leonard Cohen also died.
Leonard Cohen also died. And everybody, you know, the whole thing is why we can only... The only song that they can throw out that he wrote thousands of songs, right, was Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Because there's so many versions of it, right? But yeah.
He's a very talented man. Love some of his stuff.
Yeah, Leonard Cohen died. But this morning, and I not that I don't like Leonard Cohen, I was really bummed about the man from Uncle. I really was. Because I'm a little kid watching that show. And, you know, and just the whole thing. And who was, if anybody can remember, who were the people they were against? They were against somebody. Had like an eagle. It was like a...
It was before my time.
They had one nemesis that there was also those... It was like a two-part thing. It was when TV was so simple. It was like so simple. You had like the man...
The good guy, the bad guy.
And Uncle... I don't know. Uncle meant something.
Right,
and then,
it was you period, N period, yeah.
Right. And then the mean people, the people on the other side, they meant something too. What? Anybody? Dave, you remember? Like, you know their names? No.
We'll look it up. That's what Google's for. So, Joel, it is what it is.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
But he was like, you know what I noticed? People are dying in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm not that far. I mean, I am sort of far.
Well,
but
that's
not
pretty
that...
average. 80s.
No, because when you get closer to it, it's starting to bother me. Because I'm thinking I got to work until I'm at least 70. And then I'm only going to get like 10 years of crazy, nutty retirement, hanging out in Florida with people and...
Go down to the recovery capital of the world. Go to Delray, Florida.
No, that's why it kills me. Like 80s? That's like 20 years
like
away.
That's average.
No, it shouldn't be.
Joel just wants to live forever. You know what I got to say real quick? And then I guess we can take a break and then we'll go to Dan. But this really upset me the other day. I saw on the sex offender registry an individual that had sexual intercourse with a person under the age of 14. It was violent. The person physically and violently overtook the victim.
Right.
Right? Guess how long they did?
How long?
60 days in the county jail. And that is on the sex offender registry. You can look it up. There are people
Isn't
that have...
Isn't that crazy? That's not even like a soccer season. I mean, that's
60 days.
That's insane.
People do more than that.
Oh, my God. I mean, my brother did 10 years of doing phony art, and I'm sure he didn't want to know that, Ma, but he did. And but no, isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Right. It kills me because that's where.
Yeah. Back in the day, I did 90 days in the county jail for a petty larceny and for it was like some other
I think
violation.
You know what it is? People get more for trouble.
Days?
You get more in trouble for having sex with an animal. I'm thinking
60.
That's
I can't
insane.
Even wrap my head around
that's
that.
That's insane. No, but that's true. Our system, our legal system, really needs, and nobody wants to talk about it. But that's just crazy.
Yeah.
And look at now, it's 60 days. He gets 60 days. The victim
who was a non-stranger, which probably was a
daughter
or a friend of his, I mean, whatever,
right, has a lifetime now of trauma and all this stuff, like, it completely changed their life.
Yeah.
Their whole life. Yeah. And you get 60 days of that. No, that's insane. That's just nutty. We, yeah. You know, we have to. And I've heard some really terrible stories about this recently. But no, it's amazing to me.
Yeah. That. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. That really bothered me the other day. I think
it bothers
I messaged
me.
Pretty much, you know, everyone I knew. And I'm like, 60 days? How does this guy get 60 days?
Right, no.
That's it?
No, I don't like, I'm not big on it. And that's a sentence. Okay, so judges, I'm not big on judges or DAs or all these people. Don't. I don't know what you're thinking of. You know what it is? When it happens to you, then you'll start, when it happens to you or someone in your family, then maybe you'll, you know, get a little better.
Yeah.
I think you send them to Texas and they shoot them.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll be right back. And we'll be with Mr. Workman. All right. We're back.
Yeah. We've got Dan Workman on the line right now. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Wow. That sounds great. Yeah. From all the way from Utah.
From Utah. And Dan is the founder and writer at KeepHopingPeople.com. Several of his blogs have gone viral. I've seen a lot of his writing. So we're really excited to have you on the phone today.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I'm excited to be here.
You have quite an interesting story. So, I mean, I guess we'll just start with
yeah,
that.
We'll go. We had a discussion about night crawlers before.
Yeah.
For only our ears only, folks. So.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, what's your story? You know, what happened? What do you
do? Well, it's, you know, from Utah, obviously. I heard you guys touch on it before, and everybody knows of Utah as Mormons, or they've seen the Book of Mormon Broadway musical, which is hilarious. I mean, entirely inaccurate, but I love it. I mean, fantastic. Or they think of polygamy or those types of things, or
that's
see,
what I
like
think
Trump's
about.
Tweet saying, you know, hey, who cares about Utah? It's a small state full of strange people. And yeah, we've got our little, like, eccentric things, I guess, Jell-O and fry sauce and all that kind of stuff. But
you also
had that
TV show, too, that just talked about polygamy. It was on HBO for a long time.
Yeah, Big Love.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah. So, that, I mean, yeah, so you've been really sort of. If that's the problem, because that's how people see it.
Well, it's got, I mean, obviously there's a lot of history behind it and pioneers and you know, everybody that traveled across the country and landed here. But, I mean, I grew up in that, and my family, they were all very devout Mormons, and we all sort of have that innate desire to please our parents. And from a very young age, I mean, I wouldn't call it indoctrination. Maybe that's a little too heavy, but parents, you know, sort of tend to pass down their beliefs to their children. And so I was raised within the Mormon church. And when I was in high school, I had the opportunity to do a little bit of traveling, went to Australia and Tasmania and China. And then while we were in China, we had the chance to go to Tibet for a week, which is kind of, It was a big turning point for me, because just playing with kids in the fields and, getting to know another culture that way, getting outside of this Utah bubble, if you want to call it that, I wanted to have that. And I knew that at the age of 19, I wasn't really expected, that's the wrong word, but it would make my family proud if I went and was a missionary. And I had played the drums all through high school and won some awards and gotten some drumming scholarships. So I went to Southern Utah University. And while I was there, I knew the fire chief, the wildland fire chief, really well. And I've always been kind of an adrenaline junkie. And so to have somebody tell me, hey, we'll strap a chainsaw and an axe and a parachute to you and throw you out of a plane, I was just excited, you know, thinking, oh, that's fantastic. But based on the experiences that I've had in Tibet and out of the country, I still put in my papers to go on the Mormon mission, and they just tell you where you're going to go. And maybe I was lacking in some commitment, but my idea was if they were going to call me inside the United States, I was going to go be a smoke jumper. And if they were going to send me out of the country, then I'd go. And so I ended up spending 2 years in Puebla, Mexico, and really found my passion for writing there, because when your only contact is letters, it was a real learning experience for me to sort of share things and convey tone and all of that. And so writing has always been therapeutic now for 15, 20 years. And, but I found, and I think it's sort of carried over now into my work with addiction, that I didn't ever want to be one of those guys knocking doors and saying, hey, let's talk about Jesus. I was the guy that would just say, you know, hey, have you ever had a big white guy wash your dishes before? So we would just find people cutting down trees or digging ditches or whatever and just kind of roll our sleeves up and get dirty and get to work. And the mission president's wife couldn't stand me because my shirts were always stained and my shoes were never polished, but we just worked. And it was, I, you know, for a while there, I, when people asked me why I spoke Spanish, I was working on construction sites. I didn't really want to admit that I had gone on a mission because I had sort of fallen away from the Mormon church. But I certainly don't regret it. I mean, we found people that were literally in the process of committing suicide, a gun in their hand, or an extension cord noose, and felt like we did some good. And it wasn't religious based. It was just that idea of sort of conveying a message of hope. And when I got back from the mission, I had decided that, and maybe this is an all or nothing cognitive distortion or what, but I had just basically decided that if I didn't have that commitment that I felt like I needed, then out of respect for my family and their beliefs, that I needed to step away from the Mormon church. If I couldn't do it with my whole heart, then I didn't really deserve to have any of those kind of the blessings or the things that they feel so strongly about.
Sure.
And, got married and had a couple of kids, and I was a stockbroker for 7 years and fell into alcohol pretty hard. And then that was a quick transition into heroin and pills and other drugs. It was just that idea of not being comfortable in your own skin or knowing how to define yourself. And one of my favorite quotes is Eckhart Tolle. He says, addiction always begins and ends with emotional pain. So I've seen that a lot in so many people. So, yeah, that was, I spent a few years going through that addiction, and now that I've found my way out, and I've continued with the writing, and Robin Bright, that you guys mentioned earlier, she's absolutely fantastic. She made me her first guest author, and writers are sort of inherently needy, so I was, like, so excited to have somebody read my stuff when she showed me, oh, it's been shared, you know, 450 times, and my mind was just blown, because I thought, wow, that means almost 1,000 people could have read
something
that I'd written.
It was amazing, too, the way that you worded it. I mean, I said this when I reviewed her book. You know, I've read a lot of things about opiate withdrawal and at-home detox, but you were just so straightforward and to the point and told it like it is. Like, there was no BS. There was no sugarcoating it. And I loved it.
Now, does your it's interesting. I want to go just back a little bit. So, because you left the Mormon church, does your... Your family knows your whole situation, right? They know your story, or they don't know your story.
They absolutely do, yeah. And they knew about it then. I tried to find sort of comfort in just brutal honesty at that point. And there were some that certainly didn't really want me around their kids at that point, or felt like I was going to say something against them. And that was never my desire, and it's still not my desire. It was just about trying to not feel like I was leading two different lives and just, you know, this is who I am and it's just raw and uncut. But hopefully you guys can still find a way to get along with me. And we've made a lot of progress since then, and even since the addiction. And it's never going to be easy. People always have that sort of notion of you if you've gone through any kind of addiction. I mean, I was doing a live video feed for another Facebook group a couple of days ago, and I've got clean needles because I'm a big believer in harm reduction and Narcan and all this stuff in the back of my car. But sitting in Utah in a tank top with tattoos and everything like that, right after I finished the live feed, two cops rolled up on me because somebody had called me in for suspicious behavior. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, I spend 18 to 20 hours a day trying to give support and work with addicts and see if I can share some hope, but people still see you like a thug or whatever. But that's, you know, it's neither here nor there. It's all about how you feel about that person in the mirror.
Right. Oh, my gosh. And that's what it always comes back to for me.
Yeah, it's pretty. And that's so, especially in, well, Utah, I mean, like here, everyone looks like that. Like everyone could be a thug. But, you know, like in New York. But it's like when you get to Utah or small towns, I could just imagine.
Oh, yeah. You know, standing out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, what you're going, you know, going through.
What happened with the police? They, I mean, obviously you didn't get in trouble because everything you had was legit.
I gave them a couple of business cards with the blog on there, and we t- talked for a little bit, and they just said, have a good day, and sent me on my way, which is very, I guess, shows the contrast between recovery and active addiction, because,
right.
Yeah, I mean, a year and a half ago, I think I got arrested for jaywalking just out of the blue. And you guys touched on this a little bit, maybe I shouldn't delve into it too deeply, but I have always believed in do no harm, and you guys have touched on sort of that Buddhist belief in the recovery program that you're working with there. And I mean, addicts are very good at harming themselves, but so many of them are extremely empathetic and they just don't know how to cope with all the things that they're feeling, but wouldn't hurt anybody else. And it was very interesting because I took a bunch of Xanax and Ambien, and I drove somebody else's car that looked identical to mine four blocks. I got hit with grand theft auto for that. I had $15 worth of drugs on me. I got sentenced to 120 days and picked up three felonies because of it.
Oh my God.
And did the same amount of time with a guy in jail who had been essentially pleasuring himself in front of a four-year-old girl laughed about it in front of the judge. And I'm sitting there thinking, which of us is more of a threat to society?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that that's so sad, because that's what's going on everywhere.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's really...
I can't even wrap my head around that. I just really can't.
Yeah, because if you actually ask anybody, like if you asked a judge who's running for office or anything, they'd say, that never happens. But, there's pages of it written that all that stuff does happen.
Yeah. Certainly does.
And it's just amazing. Did they ever, your family ever say, well, if you didn't, drift from the Mormon church, none of this would have happened? I'm just sure you would have gotten that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a huge cautionary tale here around everybody.
Right. That's why, I'm just saying, because like,
don't leave or you'll be like Dan.
Right. That's what I was wondering.
Heroin addict, but.
Right. Because they could use it for all way, any way. They could say, look what happens when you drift away from us.
And, I wish I was a little bit more educated on Mormonism, but are you have to abstain from alcohol and other mood altering chemicals, correct? When you're Mormon?
Including coffee, but it's great because it's put me in a position now with family members who, and I see this in Utah all the time, that people, they're scared to talk about it, and they don't realize that that everybody's got their vice, whether it's Haagen-Dazs or porn or gambling or whatever they're doing. But it's this image that happens here in Utah where it's all about how straight your white picket fence is, and nothing against those people or what they're trying to do. I mean, they're still my people. But it is very interesting when you just live brutally honestly with this sense of just, I've screwed up and I'm flawed. And now I have little cousins coming to me saying, hey, Dan, I smoked weed one time. And I'm like, okay, well, that's right. Like, let's just talk about it. Or somebody who's high up in the church saying, oh, when I'm on business trips, I like to drink coffee sometimes. But it's interesting because I've screwed up in so many ways and been open about it that they feel like they can come and talk to me. Right. And I am constantly reminding them, look, if you were able to open up like this with everybody, you'd find out that we're all in the same boat with these types of things. And... I think that's what... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was going to say, because in Big Love, they had a lot of dirty little secrets.
I think everybody does.
It's Hollywood, but it's,
we all do. I mean, nobody's perfect. No. And not everybody is injecting heroin or anything else into their veins. But it's not... It really shouldn't be that comparison. And I know that horrible things have been done in pursuit of drugs. But I also have seen the amazing things that recovering addicts are capable of.
That's been
one of my biggest platforms. And you guys talked about the blog when Robin and some other people pulled together and bought this keephopingpeople.com. It was just something that I had said on YouTube videos out of the blue, and it was all about kind of documenting my own recovery. Mm-hmm. And I was reading some of these news stories about overdoses, and it continues to get worse. And the hate that is spewed in the comment sections about, they're just a junkie and they want to kill themselves and let them die. I mean, it's basically a cry for genocide, these outlaw Narcan people and all that kind of stuff. And it really kind of lit a fire in me. But I didn't even have a functional laptop at the time. I had written everything on my phone. It was, I hopped out of the shower and I typed this thing up and I called it Let the Junkie Die. And like I'd said before about Robin Bright sharing my story, 3 days later, it had been shared 50 something thousand times. And I was just blown away. I mean, it was, so it's all happened very organically, but as it's progressed, it's been amazing the opportunities that it's opened up. And, I'm just extremely grateful every single day. It's just like, wow, you know, I still want to hide from it sometimes, but you can't do that. You just have to kind of drop your shoulder and go for it.
Yeah. Well, in that Let the Junkie Die blog, I didn't even realize that was you at first. Like, we had already connected, and I had seen, I mean, that went viral. I mean, here in the recovery community in Rochester, everybody was sharing that. And then I made the connection, like, oh my God, wait, that's right. This is Dan. Like, that's, did you have a lot of people that didn't read the blog right away and they just saw the Let the Junkie Die and were they like,
Meaning?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
A sneaky writer's trick. You should see how many people are mad about some of the titles that I use. And,
no, that's great.
But if you
great,
actually go through and read it, you'll find that I try to convey hope and everything I do and just tell people, like, wherever you're at, if you're breathing, it's still possible. You can still win, and you're absolutely worth it, and you deserve good things. And when I speak with families who are dealing with somebody who has addiction, it's that same type of message of just, let's approach them with empathy and compassion and not dwell on the past, because there's nothing we can do about that, but let's focus on today and set a plan so that we can actually look forward to tomorrow rather than dreading it. Because I knew so acutely that despair of just feeling like all hope is lost and the hole is too deep and your mess is too big. And I attempted suicide multiple times. It was, I thought that I was ashamed to my family and my name. But I feel like now it's just about trying to make yourself a little bit better one day at a time, and hopefully I can leave a better legacy for my daughters than what I was doing there for a few years.
Sure. Now, what are you doing now? You're branching out into other human service and on social issues, which is great. I mean, is that your mission now? Everything you want to do? So you're going out and looking at, because I mean everything is the same. I mean, when we talk about battered women or any kind of abuse at home, I mean, it all comes back to similar symptoms of alcohol and drug abuse. And this, but it's like everything, it just because I always tell people that people in recovery are like angels, right? They're people that actually after they start getting well, and you have to have a scar really to treat scars sometimes. And I just think that it's just interesting what you're doing, because you are branching out, right?
I am. I'm, like I said, it has all happened organically and very, very fast. It's been, things have snowballed, but in such a good way, because I've never been so passionate about anything. And so right now it's a matter of just trying to find balance, because sometimes my ideas and heart are a little bit bigger than my wallet or my
right
what my body will handle.
Yeah, we know how that goes.
I was going to say, we can relate to that.
We can relate to that a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, 140 hours a week forever. But there have been a lot of opportunities that have opened up because people have they've sort of wanted to get involved with this cause. And I think that's on my end. I want to be boots on the ground. I want to sit in the gutter with people who have been there. I want to talk to families, and I feel like I can relate to people on so many levels. But I've been flown up to Seattle to meet members of like the John Volkan Academy, which is a long-term therapeutic community, and do local outreach with the Hope Soldiers and Hope Crew, and went down to Southern California and then South Florida to see what was going on there. And then people donated miles for me to go up to the Fed Up rally in DC. And I met guys like Chad Sabora and Robert Riley from the Mo Network, who are all about safe needles and Narcan education. And they have a group that they call Rebel Recovery.
Yes.
And, so for me, it was just amazing. I mean, I felt like I was playing T-ball and then just got asked to go play catch for a day at Yankee Stadium. And then there I was, being asked or invited by these guys to, you know, hey, why don't you be Rebel Recovery Utah? And then, well, why don't you be the Western Regional Director over the entire thing? So it was, when you get involved and you find that passion within the recovery community, I think it's very natural for, and especially if you've gotten any kind of attention, there's going to be treatment centers that want to scoop you up and And it didn't take long for me to realize that I was not a good fit for a marketing type situation. And nothing against people that do that. It's just a matter of being completely transparent. And I didn't want to be in a situation where I was required to meet some quota, or I was getting paid on a commission or a bonus level for sending people to treatment. So I was approached by Nick Boltman, who's the president of the board of the Discovery Institute in New Jersey, and he just said, hey, we love what you're doing. We want to give you the promise that no matter where somebody is at, regardless of their insurance, if they're not a good fit for our program, we'll try to find somewhere that is. And if they are, then we'd love to help them. But it really alleviated a lot of the stress, because I was having kind of a panic attack at that point, saying, how can I do this full time? And still, I mean, I was working construction when all this started. I was framing houses, and then I'd stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning trying to answer Facebook messages and emails from people. And so it was like, okay, I can't burn the candle at both ends and still be efficient at any of this. So I wanted to make it full time, but it needed to happen in the right way. And so, yeah, it's, I certainly, for people who want treatment or need it, like it's put me in a good position to help them. But I just like that idea of having my integrity intact, where right. If somebody is homeless or has great insurance, it makes no difference to my pay. So with Rebel Recovery and Keep Hoping People and the Discovery Institute, I've been able to use some of those connections and now branch into, I'm teaming up with a lady here in Utah that runs an organization called 10,000beds.org, and that's just for finding scholarships. And and now this, where I'm at right now in Utah, is to go look at a place that I might team up with some people and see if we can use it in the off season when it's not fishing time and it's just cold, and that's when the recovery or the treatment industry is exploding, because right. People don't want to be in the streets or dealing with the holidays, whatever it is. But there's a real shortage here for women who have dealt with any kind of domestic violence. So we're talking about trying to buy this as a place to give them a safe haven, even if it's just during the winter, and then hopefully create jobs. And so it is just, it's about finding balance, and I'm still kind of flying by the seat of my pants, but that's where I'm at. And it's a great day today, and we'll just see how tomorrow goes.
And I like that you stay true to you, because that's something that Joel and I talk about, is just like being your authentic self and staying true to you. And, you know, we talked through private messaging on Facebook before about just like the hate that is in the recovery community sometimes, like between support groups, or, you know, this is my way to recover. This is the right way. No, this is the wrong way. And, you know, just focusing on what's really important, what's like the real issue, is helping people. And, you know, I think we're a lot alike when it comes to that, the three of us.
Because nobody agrees with us. They really don't. They don't agree with us.
The more I write, the more people I make mad, but it's fine. It's not about, when I write something, I don't know if it's going to be shared 30 times or 30,000 times. And it doesn't matter. I wrote about the girl Erica Hurt, who was in Hope, Indiana. I mean, that was such a slow pitch for a writer right there.
Right.
And it wasn't about getting thousands of views or tens of thousands of views or anything. The message that I got back was one of the comments on there was from her mom saying, Dan, thank you. We've seen so much hate towards her because, she overdosed in her car with a 10-month-old in the backseat. I would never condone child endangerment, but Erica needs people to reach out to her and say, hey, you can get through this and you're still worth something, and it's going to take some work, but you can be a wonderful mother and a wonderful person, and this doesn't have to be your defining moment, regardless of what is said on social media or in the news. So, I mean, if only one person had read it, but it had been Erica's mom, it would have been completely worthwhile. And so it's not all of the politics and these wedges that are constantly being driven within every community, it just dumbfounds me sometimes, because I think, this mentality that we have right now, and I don't know if it's because of social media where it makes it easier for people to be the worst versions of themselves.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Can't really focus on. I
think so.
And I don't know if it's one of the only video games that I ever got into was one where you got to choose if you were going to be evil or good. And I still was going around kicking chickens and doing all the horrible stuff that I wouldn't do in real life. But it seems like now, because of, even though we're all so connected through the internet and everything else, there's a greater divide, it seems like, and we need to treat each other like human beings and realize that if you showed a cell with somebody or sat down and had a lunch, regardless of where they're at with sexual orientation or religion or race, gender, anything, you can find something in common, but you've got to be open to the possibility that you could be wrong, right, and you need to listen rather than just waiting for your turn to speak, and just show a little bit more kindness to each other. And I keep coming back to what things were like the day after September 11th. And it was just everybody rolled their sleeves up and got to work. And it wasn't about hate or differences or anything. It was just, you know, let's reach out and help each other. So I'd love to see more of that. But
no, you're right. Social media is it's the best of all things and the worst of all things. And
absolutely.
Well, and luckily we've got, you know, people like you out there right now that are helping spread the message of hope and positivity and, you know, showing the world that, you know, we do recover. I know it sounds cheesy and cliche because that is being thrown around all the time right now, the we do recover thing, but it's true. And more people need to see that and see people as people and not as, you know, addicts.
Right.
We're people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, like I said, I mean, I didn't come into this with any kind of credentials or anything. It was just speaking from my heart, and you're talking about some of these things that are wonderful messages, but have become cliche. And I don't know how many times as a writer I've put something on paper and thought, wow, that's brilliant, and then find out that somebody else has already said it 1,000 times.
That's okay, though.
there's no original ideas. It's just how we implement those things and try to share something with each other. And I'm just, you know, one guy. I'm driving a crappy 2001 Honda. I fart myself awake. I pick my nose at stoplights. I mean,
there you go.
This idea that there's anything special or unique about me, it's not. It's just I've found something that I'm very passionate about, I'm excited about, and I'm hoping that I can constantly stay out of my own way, because regardless of your opinions on things, there's so many different trains of thought, whether it's the ripple effect or to thine own self be true, or I think therefore I am, or the secret or law of attraction. Even your third grade teacher told you, hey, you can be anything you set your mind to. I mean, I think people are capable of amazing things. And that's been my favorite part of recovery, is not what I've accomplished myself, but when it's fueled somebody else's fire or passion, and then they've wanted to start a clean needle exchange or their own support group, or just reach out. And that's what drives me and keeps my batteries charged, is when I have somebody say, hey, you know, I heard about you in a meeting in West Virginia and it made me want to be a better person. And I'm thinking, great, it's not about me, that's about you. And so, yeah, I guess it's just see where it goes from here.
Well, we really thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much.
You know, it's interesting because we don't, you know, we're in the same boat. We don't know how many people are listening, or when we go, we also have a national podcast too that we go on, and it probably gets played more there, but we never know till we start getting all the feedback from our listeners. Mm-hmm. And you just don't know, but if it helps one person, then we've done everything we could. And I think that's
exactly
the biggest part of it.
So thank you.
And so many people, so many people start that with their recovery. If I can just tell my story and it helps one person, and that's the goal. And if it does, then that's great. If it gets bigger, it's not about you. It's just that same mentality. So thank you guys very much.
Well, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day out in Utah.
Yep.
And thanks so much for coming on the show.
Will do. Thank you guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, that was great, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting guy. You know, it's interesting because it's so funny, because it's always because I was wondering how the family would have just shunned him.
I didn't realize he was still Mormon, so that's
I don't know if he's still Mormon or he's, because I think you're in and out of it, right?
Right.
But they didn't shun him. But it was enough where they probably would have said, see, if he would have stayed around a little bit longer, it would have helped. But,
it's interesting. I'll have to ask him how close he is to Moab, because I might be going out there.
Yeah, when?
I believe it's March. We'll talk more about that on another show, but it's for a cool purpose.
She is the most traveling person I know, so I don't even know what to say anymore. But
all right,
you guys have a great week.
Yeah, let's go check out that new venue.
I know. Let's go. Love you, Carrie.
Love you too, Joel.
See you later.
See you.
Have a good week, everybody.